Hi, I'm Drew Nelson, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn.
WHFR's fall benefit is Saturday, November 7th. Join us for an evening of live blues music featuring Danny Croha, the Dale Robertson Band, Tasha Owens, and our host band, Big Al and his blues crew, with special guest, Ivory Darnell. For only a $5 donation, you can support WHFR and have a great time. 21 and over, please. That's Saturday, November 7th at the Whiskey Bar on Warren, just west of Outer Drive in Detroit. Let the good times roll.
This is Rob with Two B's, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn.
The following program is pre-recorded. It does not reflect the views of Henry Ford College, WHFR radio station, staff, or members. Hello, this is Betty Daniels, and welcome to Impact. In 2012, Henry Ford College received a $15 million TAC grant to retrain workers in manufacturing. Henry Ford College is the lead college of a 13-college consortium. The consortium has a website which describes in detail what the $15 million grant does. During the program, you will hear segments from the consortium website. In the program, we get a look at where the college consortium is after 3 years of implementation. During the interview, you will hear from the faculty from the Corporate Training Department of Henry Ford College as they work with the tech grant.
Well, in order to really design the curriculum for true competency-based learning, they have to figure out how best to do it for their program and students. But we have to design the system that's right for the skill set of our faculty and also the needs of our students. Long process, not easy, a lot of professional development, a lot of development time, and a complete commitment to doing what's right for the student. And then building and structuring the entire curriculum to build towards that, building knowledge, laddering, progressing through, getting to achieving a level of learning. That's pretty good. It's how to do that in an environment that allows for a variety of different learning styles and a variety of different learning pathways. You really have to hook on to those faculty that are willing to really deconstruct what they've always known about education and reconstruct it in a way that's best for the student. The impact that we saw on students, a couple things, is, you know, you have a student that is motivated and has the ability to organize themselves, okay? That type of student soars in an open, flexible, competency-based education, and they will typically take what would be considered a two-year degree and will be able to ratchet it down to about a year and a half because of both their life experiences and their discipline. They can really get through the curriculum quickly. But let's go over to the unmotivated student. You can still do competency-based education, but what we found is you can't provide too much unstructured learning. They thrive in a more structured environment early on. We found that for our first semester students that were younger, that we put them in a structured environment. We allow them flexibility, but it's within a certain structure. And you'll see them start out as kind of a novice student. But if you provide them enough flexibility, they start learning how to discipline and motivate themselves. And we found that after about a semester, we could then kind of unshackle them into a more unstructured environment, and they flower and thrive.
Scott Yedley, and I work at Henry Ford College, but I manage a national initiative of 13 schools in 10 states, and our work is all about improving the alignment of manufacturing education mm-hmm. with what industry needs.
Okay.
So it's helping colleges meet the needs of employers.
Okay. This, what type of student would be find themselves in a good user-friendly environment within this type of program?
So any student that is interested in hands-on learning and that likes applied learning and likes a challenge, especially a troubleshooting challenge, like if you're trying to solve a problem and that's something you can get your head around and you don't mind doing that with the team, this could be for you. There's a lot of students that don't have a clue yet of what the new world looks like in manufacturing and how intriguing, clean, and exciting it is.
All right, okay.
So a four-year project, we're in our third year.
Uh-huh.
And we are completing our implementation phase.
Okay.
So first we planned, and then so we did team development up front with the 13 schools nationally.
All right.
And then we planned for about a year, and then we implemented for about a year.
Okay.
And we're going to evaluate during this last year, but our formal project ends on March 31st.
Okay. Now, in those different phases, what have been the assignments and what was the objective and how close did you meet your objectives?
We're doing fantastic
at
reaching our objectives due to the work of the team that you're going to meet with here at starting at 10 o'clock. And our objectives were to improve the alignment of manufacturing education with the industry needs. And so like Henry Ford, each of our partner schools, and you'll hear the names be called out, one of the things we need to remember to ask them to do is tell you where they're from,
right?
So that you get an idea of what the footprint looks like nationally. So our job was to align the manufacturing education better with industry. And our industry partners help us do that.
Okay.
And so we kind of make up the footprint, except California, of auto manufacturing in the U.S.
All right. Okay.
And we represent Nissan and Toyota and Ford, GM and Chrysler and several component suppliers, tier one suppliers, and many other manufacturing industries near each of our partner schools.
Okay.
So.
All right. Now, what was involved, you know, and I remember the show is for people who are really not jargon friendly.
Right.
Okay. So when you say align, what are, you know, help us to kind of like put that in layman's terms.
Yep. So industry feels like colleges prepare workers, right? But not with the right skills.
All right.
And so there's, because we have, like, the article I gave you talks about 10,000 baby boomers retiring on a regular basis over and over again. And with that retirement comes the need for skilled workers to take their place.
Right.
And we don't have them. Industry doesn't have the skilled workers that they need.
Uh-huh.
And our programs currently do not produce the best skilled worker. We've got some pilot programs running that do an excellent job, like unprecedented job of that. But our previous traditional programs don't give them the right skills.
All
right. The skills shifted.
Right.
And we didn't keep up in schools with what they need.
Okay. So, all right. So that's the alignment that you're talking about?
That's the alignment, is to make sure that when the student comes to their coursework, they do two things. One is they get the right skills. And the second thing is they get hands-on chance to apply them.
Okay.
So it's not just theory. You know, industry is not looking for you to understand the theory of work.
Right.
Right. They want you to have skills when you come to the place of employment. So for our students, that means work in a manufacturing facility.
All right. Now, I've got two questions that came up. I'm trying to remember the first one.
Okay.
The skills that each college is addressing, are they cross schools, like if whatever Henry Ford College is doing here, and you know the skills they're learning, they can go to another one of the, in the consortium or another like business and get that same, even use the same skills?
Yep, absolutely. So we are all preparing students for similar work. So the skills are transferable. Is that the question you're asking?
Yes.
Their skills are absolutely transferable, and we are implementing processes to make that even easier to do, so that you can tell another industry what skills you have that are meaningful to them.
All right.
And we're doing that through an unexpected innovation.
All right.
Using performance-based objectives, or what we call common objectives,
right,
so that an industry partner in Kentucky or a student in Kentucky can use the same terminology to talk about their skills as a partner in Texas at the Alamo Colleges.
All right.
Or a partner in Virginia.
Okay. Now, because you were starting off and you were, you know, first trying to organize, you know, and understand about this communication between partners and that type of thing, how has there been much of this application and operationalized with the students, or are you building to the point where you will be ready to bring in the students? I know there's some students on board now, but...
So, to date, our program has touched over 3,000 students.
All right.
Okay, so we already have, and the students know about the model only because they are appreciative of the education, or they get an opportunity to do more hands-on work, or they might be connected with an employer through an apprenticeship or a technician program.
Okay.
But on the school side, we're introducing them to new and improved procedures.
All right.
You know, on the college side, which helped them to receive a better education experience.
All right. What do you anticipate the student enrollment being, or is that where you are now, is looking at how to get the message out to the student body, or you know, what's going on
in
there?
The past dozen years or so, we have not seen the call for employment ever at the current rate.
Okay.
And there is a dire need for skilled workers in precision machining, in mechatronics, in skilled maintenance, multi-skilled maintenance, industrial maintenance, electrician work, millwright work. We have unprecedented requirements from industry partners for workers, students, people who can do the work. So we have engaged advisors that are specific to industrial technology to help students have a place to go align with the work that's available and to make sure that the courses they're selecting are the right ones for the industry need.
I saw a, I guess it's an infomercial type of thing where it was different manufacturers had specific kinds of things where people had to do a lot of relocating. Is that something that seems to be a part of what's going to be happening? Is that once the skills, because there's such demand, they can go relocate different areas? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. The manufacturers are global, so the positions are global.
Okay.
And it is common now for a manufacturer to have workers that move from one location to another, and lifestyles, with spouses both working full-time, often result in relocations and moves where a person does want to take their skills and move to another similar position, either at a same manufacturer, same manufacturer, or different manufacturer, similar work.
Okay. I touched base with Wes about, you know, in the traditional college or education thing, you have the bachelor's, you have the associate's, that type of thing. This is more, and then there's the trade training, which sometimes did not transfer to the traditional program, I'm hearing when I was went through that tour with Wes over the classroom, where I heard about hydraulics.
Glenn. Went over there with Glenn.
And the question I am asking, is there now a new trade coming up that's within the manufacturing, or are the old trades still there and just evolved to another level?
Both. Old trades are absolutely evolving to another level because technology is evolving to another level. Each launch of a new vehicle or a new product in manufacturing brings with it updated technology, more robotics, more automation. More automated welding and assembly equipment. And so no longer longer is it totally people putting together products. It's equipment putting together products that are all managed, repaired, and built by people.
All right. So it's just the reverse now.
Well, yeah, the roles are changing, yes. Right? And so, which is pretty cool because for manufacturing, it makes a much more attractive job for a young person coming in. It's exciting. It's digital, mm-hmm. You know, it's computer, you know, managed, and so it's a pretty cool work.
Mm-hmm.
So the skills are changing for traditional trades, mm-hmm. and technician work, and then there are brand new kind of all-inclusive positions that open up for technicians, where the technician does much more. They're responsible for welding and electrical work and machining. And they're actually troubleshooting based.
Right.
So the new skills are about looking at a large manufacturing system and being able to troubleshoot the system. Where in the past you would have repaired a motor, typically motors today are replacement parts.
Yes.
And you're looking at a much more challenging troubleshooting situation, mm-hmm. where you're responsible to think about what's wrong in the system.
Okay. As I was talking to Glenn and you, there's this excitement, or I guess the best word is to say excitement, that I pick up as you talk about it. Why is this so exciting to you?
Well, you know, Glenn and I are both veteran industry guys, right? And we're excited to work with colleges because the skills have shifted. And this is not your father's or mother's plant that you walk into today. These are clean, mm-hmm. they're automated, they're very challenging, mm-hmm. you know, they're digital.
Right.
So it's a new environment. It comes with it a new set of challenges.
Okay.
And what's exciting about it is that for young people and for veteran workers, changing positions to improve their career.
All right.
The new world is clean and exciting, right? Comparatively.
Right.
We in manufacturing originally had lots of dark locations that were poorly lit and were often dirty because of the manufacturing processes. And that's not the case. The plants impress all the veteran workers almost. Every time we visit a new facility, right,
we're
impressed with the technology and the automation. For brand new students, mm-hmm. a lot of the work is like a video game.
All right.
And it is. It's not that we kill people, right? But you definitely tackle problems one at a time and try and solve them, often with electronic equipment.
Right. Do you think that given the type of growth and development that occurs within this field, that the two-year, which is, you know, there's nothing, you know, it really isn't really stay two-year, but the community college might be the best way of trying to bring these kind of things in, because you're not locked into a like a 4-year type of, you know, step by step, and if so, why?
So I can tell you we have a lot of information on our website about why it is that a person today should consider a 2-year degree from a community college versus a university degree. But the bottom line is application and applied skills. So we have customers in the OEMs, General Motors, Chrysler, and Ford, that have engineers that are being hired from schools that are looking now for a way to help them learn applied skills, troubleshooting, hands-on skills. Because those skills are critical, not just at a technician level, but at an engineering level as well.
Right.
And the best engineers today have a combination of theoretical skills and applied skills, hands-on skills.
Okay.
So when a student or a worker begins at a community college and learns applied skills,
right,
where they have hands-on education, they are very valuable to the company.
Okay.
Right, the company is looking for a worker that could grow into engineering or grow into a management role, but that has applied learning skills already.
All right.
They want someone who can solve problems. They want someone who can work with a team. They want somebody that understands the process of solving a problem.
All right.
So I think there's a huge advantage to starting with an applied degree first.
Okay.
You know, in industry, they train people for years how to do the work.
Good morning. I'm Paul Turner. I'm with the Kentucky Community and Technical College System out of the state of Kentucky. Our local Bluegrass Community and Technical College has been part of a collaborative effort with Kentucky FAME. That is the Foundation of Advanced Manufacturing Education. Toyota, who is our regional partner, hopes to see the same program implemented at all five of the of their manufacturing concerns around the country. It involves interns that they have selected from all the high schools in the state of Kentucky. It once the interns are selected, they have 2 days a week that they will spend in a manufacturing type classroom, which is equipped very similarly to what they will find out on the factory floor. They spend 3 days actually working in the factory with technicians. So after 4 semesters of hands-on work experience, these folks are really job ready. Key to the Advanced Manufacturing Technician program is a series of what is called by Toyota manufacturing core skills. It includes safety culture, workplace organization, or 5S, a total production system for manufacturing, problem solving, and maintenance reliability. It also includes a series of behaviors, which is what we would normally think of as a work ethic. These soft skills, it may be the answer to what industry needs today. And we feel that this has the potential to benefit manufacturing everywhere in the United States.
All right, we have just been joined by, is it?
Kinsey Mante.
All right. So at this that we're into about, is it 2 years now that we're into this, or
we're three? Actually, yeah, we're actually past 2 years. We're probably 2.5 years into it.
Yeah.
2.5 years.
Okay. All right then. Okay. So now I'm going to backtrack again because you're in the process of telling us how you got to Henry Ford and what it is that you do here. So let's maybe I should ask that question. What is your assignment as part of this particular project? What is your assignment?
As part of the grant.
Okay. Right. Yes.
Okay. The grant is from the fundamental. Of the grant is to move industry closer to, or move colleges closer to industry.
Okay.
So that our offerings that we have at the consortium schools satisfies the needs, skilled needs of industry. Okay. So from the technical aspect, that's where I get involved. From the technical aspect, we're generating course objectives and analysis tools to help close that gap between industry and institutions.
Okay, now I'll hold you up there. So when you say, so are you an instructor? Are you an instructor or are you a administrator? No, where are you?
I do a lot of, I do some curriculum development. Mm-hmm. I do some training of the consortium schools.
Okay.
And I, part of the process development for the grant itself, I don't know how to say it.
I would say maybe you help develop the products that can be used to bring industry and colleges closer together.
Okay, so now when we say products for the layperson, what is the product?
So one of the ones we've been working on a lot is a tool that allows industry and colleges to look at skills.
Mm-hmm.
We call them performance-based objectives.
Okay.
And we have built this big database with some partners who've developed a database and an online interface where colleges and companies can go in and enter data about what skills they need.
Okay.
And then you can go back and kind of compare those.
Okay. And then give me an example.
So a college has a course that they call fluid power.
All right.
Okay, this is hydraulics and pneumatics.
Okay, thank
Industry
you.
Industry has people that work in fluid power.
All right.
It's matching what those skills are on the job to what the college is offering. We've developed this dialogue tool so that industry understands this is what I need the guy to do, and the college understands that this is what I need to provide the course.
All right.
So it provides very clear dialogue between industry and the colleges.
Right.
It gives them a format to develop a gap analysis real quick.
Okay.
To show the colleges areas continuously improving
right.
or equipment that they may have to borrow.
All right.
Or expertise from industry that they may have to lean on.
Okay.
We'll be back with more Impact in just a moment. Right now, it's time for the WHFR Neighborhood News from Henry Ford College's TCM 261 Broadcast Journalism class.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the WHFR Neighborhood News from HFC's Broadcast Journalism class. I'm Deontay Hunter, and now, here's news from your neighborhood. Breaking news this morning as two Detroit police officers have been charged with multiple cases of theft offenses and misconduct in office. James Bazzi has more on the story.
Two Detroit police officers were arraigned this morning in 36th District Court, according to the Detroit Free Press. Charles Lynham and Chancellor Searcy have been suspended from the Detroit Police Department. Lynham was given a Top Cops Award last year in Washington, D.C., and an honorable mention as part of the National Association of Police Organizations. Their next scheduled court appearance is November 3rd. James Bazzi, WHFR News.
A Romulus woman could face charges in a fire that killed her daughter and critically injured her son, according to the Detroit Free Press. It appears that the fire started in the mother's bed. Fire officials said, noting the mother was not home when the blaze broke out at 1:45 p.m. Sunday afternoon. Romulus Deputy Fire Chief Kevin Krause says that the mother arrived on the scene and was taken into custody at that point. The case remains under investigation, and any possible charges would be up to the police. A 2-year-old boy was found after being lost in a car theft. On Sunday afternoon, the child of the car's owner's boyfriend fell asleep in a car that the owner left unlocked and running. According to the News Herald, at about 4 in the afternoon, a man stole the car not knowing that the child was asleep and used it to flee the scene. The owner tried to chase down the car thief but lost him in the pursuit. The child was found half an hour later in a Burger King truck stop and was returned to the parent. A woman managed to escape from her kidnappers by jumping out of the trunk of a car as it was driving on the freeway, according to the Detroit Free Press. Jose Yanis has details.
The woman was forced from her home and into the trunk of a car at gunpoint by her former female friend and the woman's boyfriend, police said in a news release. They then drove away from the victim's Dearborn home and east on I-94. But while on the freeway near Livernois, the woman used the car's trunk release and then jumped. She was taken to a hospital with non-life-threatening injuries, and her two captors were arrested days later. I am Jose Yanis for WHFR News.
The U.S. Justice Department has filed a lawsuit yesterday against Pittsfield Township, alleging that it denied zoning approval for an Islamic school. The Michigan Islamic Academy requested to build a school on a vacant plot of land south of Ann Arbor next to a subdivision known as Silver Leaf. But in 2011, the Township's Planning Commission denied the MIA approval based on the distribution that the large school would cause, the Detroit Free Press reports. The Township is accused of violating the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act of 2000. U.S. Attorney Barbara McCade said that this lawsuit is about protecting religious freedom for all Americans. The Dearborn War Memorial takes on a new scenery as part of its relocation. After 24 years outside the former City Hall, the War Memorial is now owned by the company ArtSpace. ArtSpace felt the need to move the War Memorial to a more appropriate location to match its importance. As a result, the memorial relocation is planned to be moved to Henry Ford Continental Library by Memorial Day, May 13, 2016. Now, WHFR weather for Dearborn and vicinity. Mostly cloudy skies today, east winds 10 to 15 miles per hour and a high of 60. Windy with rain moving and overnight and a low near 50. Up to an inch of rain is possible with wind gusts of more than 40 miles per hour. Rain continues tomorrow with a few rumbles of thunder possible in the afternoon, windy and a high temperature of 62. Right now, it's cloudy and 55 degrees here at Henry Ford College. That wraps up this edition of WHFR Neighborhood News. I'm Deontay Hunter. Have a good afternoon, and thank you for listening to WHFR.FM, the station that's making waves.
All right.
So the student, it's only after the fact that the student realizes that this activity is really taking place.
Okay. This one might have been, what, a year, 2 years, 6 months, a process before he gets to the student?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, and in some cases, we actually do this gap analysis before we kick off the program. So it may actually be completed, and 2 months later, the program starts.
All right.
In other cases, this has taken place 6 months ago or a year ago, and the course has been modified since then.
Okay. Now, that's one of the questions I asked. When you first started, you know, you may have had certain things envisioned in mind. Has there been much changes as to what this, the businesses said they wanted or what they needed? Has there been any changes from that point?
When we first started, we knew that we were tasked to move industry and colleges closer together. We were not really clear on how to do that when we started.
Okay.
So this is something that has evolved as we learned, as we studied, and we developed this dialogue tool.
Okay. Can you give an example of that of really Chris would understand?
I would say one thing is that we didn't understand where the disconnect was. And I think we've come to a point where we're thinking it's a communication disconnect. So at the beginning it was, well, we know that sort of the technology has taken off.
Okay.
And it's kind of, both sides are aware of that issue, but it's difficult to figure out how to fill that gap.
Okay.
And so part of, I think, what's changed is how we see the problem or the challenge, that it's no longer just an issue of, you know, nobody, we've come to understand kind of the root cause or what we think is the root cause.
Colby, that's the one person who was saying, sometimes the way you see the problem is the problem and not necessarily the outcome. Okay, so that's the kind of definition. What kind of language has the left and the right come to, so you can communicate a bit better?
That's the PBO, performance-based objective.
Okay.
So the performance-based objective is a way that the school repackages all their topical outlines, all of their course masters, all of their syllabi, and DACOM information, repackage it in such a way that industry very clearly understands what's being covered in the courses.
Okay.
Then industry reviews that list of performance-based objectives and says either applies or it doesn't apply. And now we start aligning the two, the offerings with the needs of the industry. Industry also has an option of adding on additional needs.
Okay.
And that's where the college learns, is, oh, now you've got this kind of technology.
All right.
We have to add this kind of equipment in order to support that.
Hey, knucklehead, what are you doing?
Just throwing away this old WHFR loyal listener guy.
Well, make sure you recycle it, lame brain.
I know.
Better yet, why not save a tree and sign up for the WHFR e-newsletter instead?
WHFR has an electronic newsletter?
Yeah, you just need to go to their website, Hey, pay attention when I'm talking to you, WHFR.FM, and hit the sign-up link. It has all the same bells and whistles of the paper newsletter.
Really?
Yeah, it's the most up-to-date WHFR info sent right to your email box. You got one of those, don't you?
Yeah, I got three of them.
Ah, you wise guy, think about it.
Yeah, no more running up to the record store to get my copy and saving me on gas, too. Info sent right to my email box. That makes me very happy.
Well, okay, Mr. Happy. Let's go to WHFR.fm right now and sign you up.
Yeah, let's go do it.
It's informative, quicker, and easier on the environment. It's the WHFR electronic newsletter. Visit our website, WHFR.fm, and sign up today.
The traditional coursework, what type of changes in the, I guess, the teaching style, because, you know, what are some of the major teaching styles or changes that you've seen since this kind of thing is going on?
Well, I'm a technical guy. So from the technical aspects, you know, when I walk upstairs and I take a look at what we have in our industrial computer lab, what I see is what's missing.
Okay.
Now what's there is very relevant and it's state of the art, but they're missing these components. So this gap analysis all of a sudden points out that you need to add these components to your hardware and train on these components so that you can fit industry's needs.
What would you think would be one of the things that the school has learned the most as far as since they've been involved in this process? What do you think they
from the technical side, educational side? What you have to understand is technology is constantly changing. The technology that was in the plants 7 years ago is not the technology. It's being moved into the launches this year.
Okay.
And colleges have to continuously adapt to those technological changes. That's a challenge.
Okay.
It's a challenge for the equipment. Mm-hmm. How you buy the new equipment and pay for it. It's a challenge for instructor training.
Okay.
We have to take the instructors and provide additional training for the instructors on the new technology. It's a change for curriculum development. Now all of a sudden there's real costs associated with the changing curriculum to match the changing technology. So therefore, you know, it's just there are real costs to do this and to stay up with industry. And
is that one of the major changes within the academic arena, being able to make those kind of quick changes?
Yeah. It's not quick changes for industry, but in the minds of your classical educator, it is a quick change.
Okay, all right. What about the student? Has the student had to be able to make those kind of adaptations?
What? This is, I won't say who, but a major driver for the local OEMs that I'm talking. And after we review the courseware and review the objectives, then we looked at each other and said, you know, that what we're talking about now is a technician who is far more advanced than the former electricians and pipe fitters and millwrights. I mean, now we're challenging these people now. We require higher academic standards just to get them through the course.
Right.
So that industry can use these people.
All right.
It's really academically challenging now.
Are they making the grade? Are the students making the grade?
Yeah, for the most part.
Okay.
Yeah. Today's manufacturing is not like the manufacturing 25 years ago. It was a dirty, oily, smoke-filled, tough environment. Walking in today's assembly plant, it's a beautiful place to walk. It's absolutely clean. It's, you know, it's well organized. It's and so everything's changed in manufacturing. I sat on a council for Michigan Manufacturers Association. And what we were struggling with is where we're going to find a workforce for tomorrow. And that was one of the major outcomes of that panel, was that we need to educate the high school, the junior high students, their parents, their counselors, of what manufacturing is today.
How many different, skill sets are we looking at? I'm saying skill sets.
How many categories of skill sets?
Yes.
Where are we at right now?
22, I think.
22, and that is probably another 5 that we're missing that we're working on. And that addresses primarily some of process control industries, as refineries, food processing, and so on. It addresses, it will address machine tool industry.
Uh-huh.
as far as operating CNC machines. That's one of the ones we're working on right now.
And on this $15 million grant from the Department of Labor, it's a TAA grant, and the first three letters, TAA, stand for Trade Adjustment Act workers, basically. So TAA workers is an actual classification from the Department of Labor. That means that your job maybe went overseas, or you were replaced by a robot, or whatever it is, or somehow your job was affected by trade, and now you're in a place where you need assistance getting back into the workforce, or upskilling so that you're, you know, reaching your full potential. Mm-hmm. So that's a major target audience as well, TAA or TAA-like individuals, which okay. can mean a lot of different things.
All right. So someone that has to that's in the process of reinventing themselves.
Yes.
A lot of them could be doing that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Okay. And it would be people who are reinventing themselves and who are open to letting go yesterday's learning dynamics. In other words, that it's not the same school that you went to 5 or 10 years ago.
We keep attempting to work more and more towards a self-directed learner.
Okay.
That's true.
Okay.
And we're in transition.
All right.
And okay. you just can't drop a 40-year-old student into that environment without preparing them for it.
All right.
And we're learning those lessons, you know, what we have to do to make this person successful as
okay.
a self-directed learner.
Okay.
Because as a self-directed learner is when you can now start looking at competency-based education and shortening up the training. So a lot of the variables that we're dealing with are based on, you know, giving that additional skills,
okay,
to a self-directed learner that they're going to need.
Okay. Is there now a lot of online type of thing going on?
Yeah, we're doing, you know, more and more online, certainly, and support with an open lab.
Okay.
I mean, with the technical areas, we still need the lab time.
All right. Okay.
You can read about it. You can work on simulators, but until you get your hands on that robot, teach pendant, and teach the robot,
okay,
you don't know it.
All right.
So we have to, even though we may be moving more and more of the theory work online, we still require, you know, the hands-on labs.
All right. Okay. All right. That's almost like a co-op type of?
More of a blended learning would be probably a better word.
Okay. All right. Okay. what changes do you see in the next 3 years?
In what respect?
Into what you're teaching and instructing now. Do you see certain major changes occurring?
You know what? I think it's going to be more data-driven.
Okay.
I think as we gather the data, we'll be able to make better decisions.
Okay.
In fact, some of the other aspects of this grant, we have, again, another company that works for us, that's designed websites for all the consortium schools that targets local labor market statistics.
Okay.
So as they go on their website, they can see, you know, exactly what their demographics are for their area, what jobs are available for their area. So I think what's going to happen in general terms is more data driven.
All right.
That we'll be making better decisions because we'll have more data to make those decisions.
All right. Is this going to stay within the manufacturing arena, or is it going to move to other areas?
Our primarily target, our target audience is in manufacturing, machining, you know, process control, and eventually in the aerospace.
Okay.
So that's our targets, which
okay.
are all either manufacturing or manufacturing related.
Okay.
Some way, you know, creating a cereals manufacturing. You know, so that technology. You know.
A lot of green industry.
Everybody is certainly interested in green, but we have not. Again, data-driven, you haven't seen the jobs created.
Do this and execute it well in the manufacturing sphere, and then we can say, look how good this works. Then maybe we can expand that into other fields like healthcare or, you know, computer science or whatever other
okay.
areas that makes sense.
Okay. Do you still have the same partners now that you have when you started out, or has there been some changes as far as the industry? Are the industry partners still the same, or the...
No, yeah, the schools are involved are all the same.
Okay.
We start with, and almost all the industry partners are still on board, with the exception of one.
Okay. Do you see yourself bringing on more industry partners at some point?
As from the consortium's viewpoint at this point, probably not, because we're wrapping down the grant.
Okay.
From the school's viewpoint, we are constantly expanding into with new industry partners.
Okay. Okay.
So from the schools, yes, from the consortium, no.
All right.
The grant was for 5 years. How many years was it? Or does it continue to renegotiate every, you know, periodically?
No, no, it's 4 years. 3 was activities, and the 4th one was measurement.
Measurement.
3.5 years.
Or 3.5 years.
Yeah. Okay. And then based on whatever the data tells you, then they want to determine where they go from there.
No, the grant's over. And then if you want to continue, then you have to apply for your grant.
Okay.
But
That's a whole new ballgame. Okay. Okay. In closing up, what 3 things would you want to impress upon a listener if you have, you know, as you summarize this?
Who's listening?
The radio audience would be the Muslim would be mostly those people who are reinventing themselves. That's your listening audience.
Well, for those people that are reinventing themselves, manufacturing is a great place to be. It's, and I know it took a serious hit and downturn. Recent years that are still reeling from, but manufacturing is the hotbed right now, and there's a tremendous amount of opportunities, jobs, and so look at manufacturing. It is it's just a wonderful, wonderful career field.
Okay. For those who don't quite understand the jargon, where would, I mean, outside of this program, which is kind of like helping them to try to go somewhere, where else would they go to try to get some more information?
I would say, I mean, you can. Any individual can start by trying to find out where the job, what the jobs are in their area. So you don't even have to dive into some of the more complex things like labor market information, because that makes it a little hard to understand.
Yeah.
But, I mean, even if you just start looking at job boards, monster.com or indeed.com, and see what the jobs are and empower yourself to understand what those jobs are. Maybe you see 10 jobs with the same name. Well, maybe that's something you want to look at. Take that name to your college counselor, you know, at your local college,
okay,
and see if they can help you.
Do you involve yourself in any kind of college fairs or anything like that?
I think Eileen does.
We have somebody in our department that does that.
Oh, okay.
That's your responsibility.
Okay.
I don't have time.
Okay, they wouldn't understand you.
Yeah. Probably not.
Okay.
But there are resources at Henry Ford.
Okay.
Definitely.
All right, okay. You were mentioning a website that people would, different people might come to that website to see different kinds of things. Where is that website?
MSAMC.
MSAMC.org.
MSAMary.org.
Yep, .org.
Okay, all right. And they can start perusing that and then get along?
Absolutely.
Okay.
There's videos on there about kind of what manufacturing is like today, about the changing college, you know, what it looks like. There's information, more technical information, there's all kinds of stuff, and each college that's in our consortium has their own page through
okay.
the website, too.
Okay.
So Henry Ford has a focus page that's all about this area.
Okay.
And from there, from the resources tab, you can actually drill down and take a look at some of these tools that we're talking about.
Okay. All righty. Anything else? Going once. Guess you got anything else that we might be able to?
Maybe just add one more comment. In this transition to pull colleges closer to industry, we've had to do some things like purchase integrated systems at fairly high cost, and we've put at least one into all the consortium schools. And we've embedded now in our programs. So our first program uses these integrated systems. It's got a robot on it, it's got pneumatics, hydraulics, computers, all this stuff. And the first class the students take is, well, let's learn about an integrated system and let's see where all these pieces fit into the system. And here's how you would troubleshoot this system.
Okay.
Therefore, afterwards, every class that you teach effectively can be taught in context. I know where the hydraulics fits because I've seen it used in that system.
All right.
I know where the pneumatics fits because I've seen it in that system.
Okay.
So now as we go through all these courses and build all these blocks up, we can teach it in context. When we get done, the last class is, okay, you think you know it? Let's see if you can troubleshoot.
Okay.
So now our last class is an advanced troubleshooting class in which we see if they can troubleshoot. So the transition that we're talking about with these colleges, it's not just been in performance-based objectives, but it's been in, let's introduce new training equipment to the colleges, let's train the colleges on how to use this equipment, and now let's start taking all of these graduates up to a higher level.
Okay.
So they can actually walk out of that school and go back on a plan for and be effective on the maintenance of that equipment.
Open lab concept. I got to thinking about it. What do these folks really need to be successful on the job? And that's to be able to perform a skill or a set of skills. And how do you develop that? Well, you hybridize the course. The reason for that is that gives the instructor and or lab technicians more face-to-face time with the student. And that's where skill set development comes in. And you guys know that just as well as I do. How do you get better at what you do for a living? Every day you get better, right? And it comes through development of skill. That's where we get the open lab concept. And am I passionate about that? Yeah. It's something where people build self-confidence by their abilities to do things. You know, so to me, that's key.
Today's manufacturing is not like the manufacturing 25 years ago. It was a dirty, oily, smoke-filled, tough environment. Like in today's assembly plant, it's a beautiful place to walk. It's absolutely clean. It's, you know, it's well organized. It's and so everything's changed in manufacturing. I sat on a council for Michigan Manufacturers Association, and what we were struggling with is where are we going to find a workforce for tomorrow? And that was one of the major outcomes of that panel, was that we need to educate. Right. The high school, the junior high students, their parents, their counselors,
okay.
What manufacturing is today.
How many different, skill sets are we looking at? I'm saying skill sets.
No, it's right. Okay. How many categories of skill sets?
Yes.
Where are we at right now?
22, I think.
22, and that is probably another 5 that we're missing,
okay.
That we're working on. And that addresses primarily some of process control industries,
all
such
right.
as refineries, food processing, and so on. It addresses, it will address machine tool industry.
Uh-huh.
As far as operating CNC machines, that's one of the ones we're working on right now. And
it's focused on manufacturing. And, you know, this group has made a commitment to the Department of Labor that they're going to focus on manufacturing. So that's kind of where this whole thing started, and that's where our focus is.
Mm-hmm.
And this type of education lends itself really well to manufacturing, which makes it a great fit.
Okay.
So if we're able to do this and execute it well in the manufacturing sphere, and then we can say, look how good this works, then maybe we can expand that into other fields like healthcare or, you know, computer science or whatever other
okay.
areas it makes
okay.
sense.
Do you still have the same partners now that you have when you started out, or has this been some changes? As far as the industry, the industry part is still the same, or the...
No, yeah, the schools involved are all the same.
Okay.
We started with, and almost all the industry partners are still on board, with the exception of one.
Okay. Do you see yourself bringing on more industry partners at some point?
As from the consortium's viewpoint at this point, probably not, because we're wrapping down the grant.
Okay.
From the school's viewpoint, we are constantly expanding into
Okay.
So from the school, yes, from the consortium.
All right. The grant was for 5 years. How many years was it? Or does it continue to renegotiate every, periodically?
No, it's
four
years. 3 was activities, and the 4th one was measurement.
3.5 years.
Or 3.5 years.
Yeah. Okay. And then based on whatever the data tells you, then they want to determine where they go from there.
No, the grant's over. Yeah, then you
Hello, My name is Ed Strong. I'm with the Corporation for a Skilled Workforce. I'd like to step back for a minute and put in context the investments that are being made in community colleges and how our government and our nation is looking to this set of educational institutions as the major providers of workforce services. These are through what are known in a long acronym of the Trade Adjustment Assistance Community College Career Training Grants. We call them TAC grants, but there are a couple of elements that went into those grants. One is that what people propose to do need to be evidence-based. There has to be some research that's been done that indicates that what is being proposed has the potential to be successful. And second, in order to follow through on that, that every one of these grants has an independent evaluation. But it is a really important step because we need to know, did people in these projects actually fare better than those who were not involved? And we do that through a very structured process. Performance-based objectives are, what are the specific things that a student needs to be able to demonstrate that they can do in order to be able to literally pass the course. If we can demonstrate that there is a positive change and that competency-based education is the way to go, we can really have an impact on how teaching in this country can be delivered. And we strongly believe, those involved in the consortium, that in today's highly global and technology-driven world, that we need a different way to teach. So I hope you will be attuned to it, and I am confident that the results will show the competency-based education is the way to go. Thank you.
Hello, I'm the Diva from Lyrical Infusion on WHFR. Every Monday evening from 8 to 10 p.m., I'm here to wish WHFR happy 30th birthday and many, 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 many more to come. WHFR, we love you.
Hello, my name is Mark Brown, and I used to be a part of the WHFR family back in 1991-ish to about almost 1998, 99. I did several opportunities, several options. Mostly did was a production manager for a spell. Did a few music, but my main job at WHFR was being the spearhead of the starter of our own sports department. We call ourselves WHFR Sports Team. I remember me and my friend John Clavette. We were the first ones to start it off. I remember asking our general manager Jay Kornick if he wanted to. We wanted to do something to cover the local area sports teams, or especially the community college, and gave us a chance, gave us an opportunity. Remember going to the gym and doing some college basketball games for the Hawks. Remember great times at that one, some clutch wins. We even went to state tournament for the Hawks men's and women's team up in Port Huron, I think, for a game or two. But that was like the starting point, and then things went on, and we went on to do our weekly sports show every Saturday for, I think, about 3 years or so, called The Sports Page. And myself, Dan Benedict, John Martin did join us for a bit. And we interviewed not only people from around the area, but also teams, local sports teams that were covering at the time. We managed to travel out to some events with some teams that are no longer with us, and we had some good times, great moments for us in there. One of our most fondly remembered moments for me was we was covering the Red Wings alumni charity softball game over in King Boring Field, and that was a great moment for us to cover that, and not just us were involved, but several of our local DJs, Alan Percival and Ken Tucker, also helped us out with that, and it was a great moment, great time there. We also got a chance to cover the Senior Players Championship back over in the TPC in Dearborn, and doing live reports from the golf course. And we also went to the Detroit Grand Prix back when it was in downtown Detroit area. We covered and did live reports from that one. So those were great times, great moments for us back then. being involved in WHFR was a great opportunity for me to get my hands into communication. I always was interested in doing radio and sports. I've always been a huge sports fan. And that was the one thing I take from my importance of being part of WHFR, was giving us the opportunity to do something like that, to get, and not just like be at the station and read off sports scores, but actually being there, going to the events, covering events, and talking with several people and individuals and coaches from high school and college, and some pros and upcoming pros. And I take the moments that I had at WHFR. There were great times for me and my friends, my colleagues at the sports team, and wouldn't trade in any of the moments for the world for being a part of it and being a part of the history, the great history that's here at WHFR. So that's what WHFR meant to me. It gave me a chance to be a sports guy, to lead the sports team, and be a part of something that was really great and really fun and really really a turning point that really helped us out and carved our own niche, as it were, for the not only for the school, but for our radio station as well.
Okay, I'm starting it now. So.
All right. So I am the wonderful Cornette Gary. I used to host a little show about eons ago, where I played the finest of punk rock, hardcore, Indian ska for all the kids to feel good to and make you feel like you're 15 years old again, but that's another thing. I have done all kinds of things here, production, programming, and everything else, you name it, I've probably done it here at WHFR, the station that is still making waves, correct? All right. Now, how did I become first and aware of the station? Well, I was taking classes here at Henry Ford. That it is. Now, what is was most fondly remembered of this station or events? How much time do you have? And I'm not even exaggerating. I'd go way past that. Let's put it to you that way. Too many things to remember. The shows I've been here, you guys put on. The opportunities of the people I've met here. Still friends with to this day, pretty much. No exaggeration. Now, they explain how the importance of WHFR then and now. Well, it's probably just technology. I mean, that's one thing. And still being technologically advanced in the digital recording and everything like that. So I'm glad to be back here today. So bye-bye.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn.